The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
I am absolutely delighted to be joined on the show by the one and only Spencer Matthews. Spencer has, in the last 30 days, completed 30 marathons in the desert. And it means he's a Guinness World Record holder. Spencer, how does it feel to have that now up beside you, the title Guinness World Record holder?
It feels pretty awesome, bro. It hasn't really fully sunk in yet, to be honest, but it's, the general, I'm really humbled by the general kind of interest in it. The fundraise has really kicked into gear now for Globals Make Some Noise. And yeah, just all the messages, mates. I'm getting messages from like heroes of mine when I was a bit younger and all kinds of stuff. I just feel really proud of myself. You know, I feel like I've come a pretty long way from where I was a few years ago. I think my former self would barely believe what we've just pulled off over the last 30 days. And it's great, mate. It's all part of a big journey, isn't it? And you know, I feel quite humbled, to be honest, by the experience. It'll hit me, I'm sure, at some point. But right now, I just feel pretty great.
Who's messaged you? Go on, give us a bit of gossip.
Oh, it's nothing. It's not they're not gossipy messages, I'm afraid, mate. But no, I got a lovely message from Bear Grylls. I got a nice message from James Cracknell.
Oh no.
Dame Kelly Holmes. Russ Cook, the hardest geezer, sent me a cool message the other day. It's just it's really cool, man. I look up to all of them, you know, enormously. But it's not just them. It's, you know, my family have been so supportive throughout this process as well. You know, Vogue has been incredible. But also just DMs and stuff. I mean, I'm not ordinarily that popular, you know. But my phone is going crazy, so I must have done something right.
How's the body?
Body's all right, to be honest, mate. It's interesting. Like it started off a bit pear-shaped, the body. Like it was a bit rough in the first couple. Then it loosened up a bit, and then I just became kind of more conditioned to it as time went on. I got a little bit more used to the terrain and the environment, not promoting this kind of activity to kind of, you know, lose weight rapidly. But, you know, it's been very difficult to replace the calories that I've been burning. So I've, you know, I'm much lighter now than when I started, but the legs are probably much more conditioned than they were to begin with as well. So, you know, the body is an incredible thing. It adapts, right, to, you know, the pressure you put it under. And, I feel like a runner now.
What surprised you in terms of that? I'll put it this way. What surprised me a little bit, because I was following you on Strava as well as the kind of social content, say, on Instagram and elsewhere. And I kind of half expected maybe after 5 or 6 days that the average pace was going to go through the roof, that, you know, you just hit a wall, at which point you'd just be kind of dragging yourself through it. And that didn't happen. I mean, there was a point maybe a week ago where it crept above 5 hours for the overall time, but only barely. And then it came straight back down again. It was remarkably consistent. Were you expecting that?
No. I wasn't expecting my body to hold up anywhere near as well as it has, to be honest. I mean, I took this challenge incredibly seriously. This wasn't ever a kind of, you know, gimmicky thing for me. This was a very serious undertaking, potentially dangerous undertaking. And, you know, I prepared enormously for this. I treated it with, you know, the respect it deserves. I ran just under 2,000 kilometers in preparation for this thing in a training block with a running coach. You know, I took it very seriously, and we did everything we could to control, you know, what we could control, and therefore limit, you know, risk as much as possible. I think. I went into this with no intention of failing, and you know, I didn't really allow myself to think too far ahead. I treated every day with, you know, respect, and I really went for it, mate. I left absolutely everything. Mm. I was about to say I left everything in Jordan, but I'm still here. So, you know, I really did exactly what I could, mate, in order to come out on top here.
despite like all of that prep and trying to make sure that everything was controlled, there's always going to be things that, you know, happen unexpectedly. And, you know, the truck getting stuck one morning, kind of getting bogged in the sand, and it meaning maybe you might have to run a bit later or looking for GPS signal, whatever it happened to be.
Yeah.
I mean, what were the hairier moments of the whole experience?
There was a few. So anything that jeopardizes your start time isn't great, because it just pushes you into that, you know, mid-40s heat. Well, I was never exposed to mid-40s, just to be clear, whilst I was running, but I was exposed to kind of late 30s, which is fine for if you're on holiday, you know, running a quick 10K maybe. But, you know, when you're stuck out there for hours and hours and you've got to recover and you've got, you know, countless marathons still to go, then, you know, that risk of heat exposure in that way is just not something that we would welcome as a team. So there was a few days where we started late. The GPS jamming or being scrambled or blocked, I'm not in the military, so I don't know the correct terms, but you know, we were relatively close to a few conflict zones along the way, a few different borders, and GPS would be blocked and scrambled, and it would mean that we would either need to completely recreate a route and get it basically quick sign off but with Guinness, or we would need to run a pre-approved route or laps of it, you know, and kind of register the data in a different way. Use your kind of, you know, GPS stuff for cadence and heart rate to prove that you're not on a bicycle or on the back of a vehicle or something like that. And then, you know, film it all and really monitor every kind of 500 meters, which becomes, it's no way to run. You know, it's like these lovely marathons through the Wadi Rum, where you can just, you know, bang out Red Hot Chili Peppers and switch off for 3 hours, you know, whilst you, you know, journey through one of the world's most beautiful deserts is, you know, what this is all about, I suppose, or what I was hoping it would all be about, I should say.
Yeah.
Camp as well was a pretty rough place, you know, so we had, again, you know, two sides of the coin. There was really beautiful camps with, you know, insane sunsets and sunrises and stars and shooting stars and lovely thick red sand. And then there was, you know, sleeping out of the back of an old abandoned water station, you know, covered in flies and, you know, urine everywhere type thing. Sorry to be graphic, but, you know, it was just, you know, there was two sides to it all, and a challenge within a challenge as well, I suppose. You know, the 30 marathons was one thing, but the lack of ability to recover properly, sleeping rough for 30 days with no toilet, no running water, no access to kind of regular food, you know, that became a challenge in itself.
What was the kind of mental challenge like? I assume there's kind of a period of novelty and excitement at the start, but then there's this lull in the middle whereby that's worn off and you're not yet in sight of the finish line.
That's exactly right. It's so funny that you explained it like that. That's exactly right. So the first 10 marathons, kind of fun, kind of cool. You're still getting to know your team. You're playing ninja in camp and, you know, having a good time and playing cards and whatever. Then the kind of novelty wore off and you've got those kind of 10 in the middle where, you know, you're not bored of each other, but you're just there to do a job. And it's kind of like you're having less fun. You know, we for those 10, were out of Wadi Rum. We were in the Wadi Araba and had to, you know, travel through this eastern desert, which is just far less visually appealing, a bit rougher, lots of wild dogs, you know, lots of barking, you know, not so great to look at, you know, firmer sand at times, but just a more barren environment. And you know, it just plays on your mind a bit that, you know, you've got a long way to go. I remember reaching 10 marathons with 20 left to go. And I thought, God, I could have just done 10, you know?
Yeah. And then you've got, I guess, on top of that, the like self-imposed rules, because it's got to be on sand. As you say, you know, Guinness have to sign off on everything. And, you know, I was watching kind of scuttling under these kind of, was it a motorway you were going under at one stage?
Yeah. So yeah, the general rule of this, I think, you know, it's been reported the, you know, my feet can't leave sand, like my feet can't leave sand. You know, it just basically, you know, you need to run the marathon on sand. We are not allowed, or I was not allowed, sorry, to run on any tarmac or kind of man-made, you know, roads. But you know, there are many different kinds of sand. You know, some sand is relatively compact, some is incredibly loose, and you know, that's why we were wearing those gaiters, so that sand, you know, you're not pouring the sand out of your shoes every, you know, couple of hundred meters. But yeah, you know, some of the sand was, and that explains, you know, some of the faster marathon times. You know, if all of the sand were completely soft like a beach, you know, I wouldn't be clocking 4:17 marathon times. You know, there was some sands that was firmer than other sand, but just no roads, no tarmac. You know, there isn't any lawn, but you wouldn't be allowed on that either.
What are you looking forward to doing tomorrow morning?
Not waking up at 2:30 to run a marathon would be nice. I think we're at a nice hotel at the Dead Sea. My parents are here, my kids are here, so I'll probably sleep until I wake naturally, which will be, well, probably 3. Thinking about it, because that's what we've done every day.
And everyone else will be asleep, Spencer. You'll just probably end up going for a run. You'll be like, you know what, I might just run around the block.
I might get up and bang out a marathon, to be honest. But, you know, don't see why not. But no, I'll probably sleep until about 8 or 9, and then hopefully there'll be some kind of, you know, awesome breakfast buffet or something like that. And yeah, no, I don't know, mate. I don't have kind of great desires to rush off and do much at the minute. Just keen to recover and spend good time with my kids.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, you look, you know better than me, but I get the sense that you're the type of person, though, for whom it won't be an awful long time before you're thinking about the next thing. Is that fair?
I mean,
you're out there running a long time. I half suspect that halfway through the desert, you were probably thinking about the next thing the odd time.
Well, I was actually just trying to focus on this when I was, you know, in okay. this. But I think I've got a friend who's an Irish fellow, actually, and he said to me, he's like, when you're done with this, you know, the running's over, is it? And I was like, I don't think I'm going to go out and succeed in this and then never run again. You know, I love running and I'll probably continue running. I think if I did go after another record of some kind, which of course I'd love to do, it certainly wouldn't be over a 30-day period. It'd be, you know, a shorter thing. I think, you know, Vogue had a challenge of her own, I think, with the 3 young kids, and she never once complained to me or anyone else. But, you know, I did feel a level of, God, it's quite a long time to be away. And, you know, I probably wouldn't do that to her on a regular basis. But no, I think I could probably find a challenge that's a bit shorter so that we can be together.
Well, listen, Spencer, I said it at the start, I'll say it again. Congratulations. It is a magnificent achievement. And it wasn't just for the record. It was as part of kind of Global's Make Some Noise campaign as well. And I know, listen, people can still donate just because the running is over. You know, donations, that portal is still open. If people want to find out about it.
Yeah. So sorry to interrupt you. Yeah. So I see this very much as the beginning of the fundraise. You know, I personally, I donate to people who are putting themselves through stuff, typically when they fail or when they achieve their goal. So I see this as a really great time for people to get involved. I would love it if people could donate. There's a link in my Instagram bio. Global's Make Some Noise, just for a very, very quick bit of background, support about 100 small charities in the UK that deal with a lot of children, but not only children who are going through kind of bereavement, mental health, mental and physical health issues, homelessness, loneliness, the kids who have siblings who have died from suicide, you know, just stuff that kind of we don't think about potentially on a daily basis, kids with cancer, stuff that we take for granted, you know, and I think, you know, I've met a lot of these families that we're looking to help, and they deserve all the support that we can give them. So if anybody's feeling generous today, please do head to the link in my Instagram bio and just donate whatever you can afford. And thanks in advance.
Yeah, Spencer Matthews, you find him on Instagram, you find the link there, and really, really worthy cause as he describes it. Spencer, congratulations again. Thanks a million.
Cheers, buddy. Thanks a lot.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.